The Power of Others podcast, season 2020, episode 14. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host here. Are you morally flexible? Mike Ehrmantraut, the cleanup guy in Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, he asked the soon-to-be-known-as Saul Goodman, the attorney, who at present is known as Jimmy McGill, are you still morally flexible? I'm not including the word still because, well, I'm not going to assume that you ever were morally flexible. I'm going to assume the best, that you are morally inflexible, unwilling to do just anything for a buck. Jimmy McGill, he became Saul Goodman because, well, he was morally flexible at some point, and Mike now is wondering if that's still the case. And sure enough, it was. It was the case. And, of course, we know how the story ends. Even though we are perhaps still enthralled with how does all this unfold from Jimmy McGill's perspective. Stories of immoral, unethical, and illegal behavior never end well. Never. You ready for a TV series recommendation? Dirty Money on Netflix. I stumble-bummed around in one of my insomnia-filled nights. Dirty Money on Netflix. It's a series about corporate greed and corruption. And the few episodes that I've seen that I've been able to watch, they demonstrate the pitfalls of pursuing profits no matter what. I mean, in one particular episode with a business owner who eventually suffered an enormous FTC fine of like $1.3 billion. Oh, and there was a prison sentence to accompany it. An interviewer asks him, "Are you moral?" And he pauses and he looks around and he finally responds, "I'm a businessman." Well, it was offensive. It was completely offensive because he was implying that you might not be able to be one while you are the other. Well, history has countless stories of greed and corruption. I mean, the great thing for these producers of this TV series called Dirty Money, they're never, ever going to run out of great stories to tell, which is sad. Cheating, cutting corners, skirting laws, skirting rules, skirting ethics. And it's not just in business. It's pervasive. Go ask the Houston Astros. Ask major college programs who have suffered NCAA sanctions. I'll go you one better. Go ask your local youth rec league directors, and I promise you, I absolutely promise you, because I know, because I've done that kind of work. If they have been doing that work for more than two seasons, they are going to have stories to tell you about youth teams who cheated. Mm-hmm. It was Eddie, what was his last name? Man, I should have had this. Eddie Guerrero. He was, I don't know if he was a WWE guy, but he was one of those. He wasn't an Olympic wrestler. He was one of those soap opera wrestlers. And the quote that he gave, you hear this quote a lot. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. And that seems to be a really common sentiment. In spite of the books and the movies, the TV shows, the investigative reports, and whatever other form of horror stories that they can take, immoral, unethical, illegal behavior in business is pervasive because greed still corrupts people. From small business owners who may choose to not report income to a multi-billion dollar company CEO who, well, chooses to violate the law. The lure? Well, I'll give you the lure in three words. Quick, easy, vast. Money. It boils down to money. Quick money, easy money, big money. People who are going to steal from you, whether they are, well, whether they're employees or shoppers, they're going to figure out how. I grew up in retail and worked running retail companies for a big portion of my career, and I learned this really early on. The employee or the shopper who is determined to steal, they're going to steal. You're not going to prevent it. You can only work harder to catch it. And if you're successful, if you're really successful, you catch it quickly. And that way you can minimize the loss. Then there is this other group of people, and these could be employees or shoppers, and they won't steal from you unless they're given an opportunity. And that's a big scale, because some people, well, they're just not going to steal from you no matter what, but other people, they'll avoid stealing from you unless the opportunity seems irresistible or if it just seems too stinking easy. And other people, well, they'll steal from you more easily, but only if the opportunity persists. And so you've got these people on this big scale who they would be honest, but you have to really help them along. So you do your best to help keep honest people honest. You remove as many opportunities, as many threats to their honesty as possible, and for yourself and for the people who, well, who may be tempted to steal or to misbehave. And that's how I feel about business morality and ethics. You know, the scoundrels are going to be scoundrels till they're caught. You're not going to stop a scoundrel from being a scoundrel. At least I don't think so. Other people, on the other hand, they can be tempted to be scoundrels if the rewards are high enough, if they're easy enough, if they're fast enough. It's the temptation that has resulted in poor behavior to bring down many, many business people who, quite honestly, would otherwise probably have behaved rather well. Yeah, but the lure, the temptation was just so great. Now, there's no excuse. Well, what about us? What about you? What about me? How can we safeguard ourselves? How can we safeguard our business? What can we do to ensure that we are behaving ethically, morally, and legally? Well, it begins with character, our character. Abigail Van Buren wrote, "The best index to a person's character is how he treats people who can't do him any good and how he treats people who can't fight back." Our character is who we are. Now, it's also who we most want to be. It's our willingness to become a better person, and it's our determination to put in the work toward becoming our ideal self. Abraham Lincoln said, "Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power." Now, some have commented that our character is really, it's who we are when nobody is looking. And that doesn't just happen. That's not just some organic thing. We have to put in the work to make that true. And that's likely where some of our problems begin. We're not putting in the work, maybe, on ourselves. Because sometimes we disconnect ourselves from who we are at work, right? There's that work us, and then there's that personal us. And we can be tempted to think, you know, we can live our life by two separate rules. And they don't have to be congruent. The way we behave at work does not have to be congruent with who we are when we're not at work. And so And mentally and emotionally, that makes it easier for us to compromise our personal convictions because, well, we can be fooled into thinking it's all good. It's all good because it's under the guise of business. Famous basketball coach for UCLA, John Wooden, said, "Be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because your character is what you really are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are." Now, I'm a teenager, and I'm working retail. I'm working in a hi-fi shop. Bait and switch is illegal at this point. State government agencies, they pay some attention to this practice, somewhat. But I'm introduced to it in the real world when my employer runs an ad in the paper for an item that we do not have in stock, well, except for the floor model. And I'm told and I have learned that it's perceived as this common practice. You know, it's one of these, everybody's doing it. Now, at the time, I don't know if that's true or not, but it really doesn't matter to me because, well, I just choose to ignore it. I'm not in control of this stuff. The object of bait and switch was to get people to come into the store and or to get people to buy something that has more profit. Well, I just knew I wasn't in control of what brought people into the store, but I was in complete control. I was in complete control over my interaction with shoppers. And that experience, that very first experience, is likely what led to my ability to employ step-down selling. In other words, rather than show the low-end loss leader that was advertised and then work my way up, I would start toward the upper end, just beyond the reach of the shopper, at least based on what they would tell me they wanted to invest. And I would honestly, candidly tell them, you don't want to spend this much money. And I understand you don't want to spend this much money, but I just want to help you figure out what is worth paying for and what isn't. So let me show you what this amount of money gets you. And after reviewing that item, I would quickly step down to another item. Now, that item would be within their budget, but I wouldn't stop there. I'd say, you know, you might be able to save even more money and you'd be really happy and you could come in way under budget, but you need to decide. And I might show them another item, and maybe that item gave up one or two features that might not matter at all to them, might matter a whole lot to them. Well, that was up to them to decide. I wanted them to decide that for themselves. My job, I felt, as a teenage hi-fi salesperson, was to help educate these people on what was available by being as honest as I knew how to be. I mean, it's something that I just figured out and did. Nobody trained me in that art, but it likely does speak to why I began to approach selling that way, kind of top down. Treating other people the way I wanted to be treated was just rule number one. I had grown up in a home and I was taught that. I was also taught to say sir and ma'am and please and thank you. I wanted to just tell people the truth and let them make up their own minds. And as for the door busting bait and switch items, well, I could go to something that provided a much higher value to the shopper. And I wouldn't make an excuse. I just tell the shopper, we've only got the one in stock. It's the one on the floor. And that would end it. But it always bothered me. I was not in control of advertising. I was not in control of stock levels. I was not in control of store policy. By the time I was responsible for those things, it didn't happen. Because I chose not to live like that. I chose not to make my employees live like that. I chose to not subject customers to that. I'm not noble. I mean, there are many things I'm not, but I had decided even as a kid, I wasn't going to be dishonest. Because at some point, very early on, the thought crossed my mind, you know, if my boss is willing to rip off customers, he's going to be willing to rip me off. So I found another job. I found more honest people to work for. And like you, probably, I also found out over the course of my career that I would have to endure many more temptations to cut corners for the sake of profits or revenues or both. Certain truths helped me along the way. One, doing the right thing is always more profitable over the long haul. Nobody loses when you do the right thing, especially you. And the math isn't as simple as people are tempted to think. I cut a corner and I double my profits. No, cut a corner and people inside your company know. And that fosters a whole different kind of workforce, a whole different kind of culture, one willing to compromise their character just like they've seen you do. Cut a corner, double your profits, but now you risk people outside your company finding out, well, there goes your reputation and there goes the word of mouth that can kill your enterprise. Cutting the corner, no matter how much money it gets you in the short term, it's not enough to risk your company or your career. Two, if you're willing to do the wrong thing today, you're going to be more willing to do something even more wrong tomorrow, because that's just how it works. I mean, it's like the addict. Enough today isn't going to be enough tomorrow. The crime gets worse and your conscience gets calloused. Justification gets easier and easier. And delusion, that just becomes your way of life. I know this, deluded business people don't last long. Well, they don't ever last long enough to overcome their delusion. It catches up with them. Three, if you do the wrong thing, you lose empathy and compassion. And you have to. You have to in order to live with yourself. Nobody matters except you. Dollars matter. Your loss of empathy and compassion, and they don't just take a toll on you professionally. It doesn't just stop at the workplace. It destroys you personally. Your relationships falter. Your self-importance grows, along with your greed and your corruption. Four, you think you won't get caught, but you will. It's just a matter of time. Bigger and brighter people, have thought the same thing till they were found out. And I don't care if it was an early morning FBI raid on their house. I don't care if it was a team from the IRS along with federal agents who came to seize all your records. They eventually, they come seeking payment for the wrong that you've done. Moral flexibility is not a virtue. It is a character flaw at best, willful criminal intent at worst. 5, doing business the right way has overwhelming benefits that no corner cutting can match. You prove what an honorable, upright, moral business you are determined to lead, and that prompts you to attract people who want to work in that type of environment. Scoundrels need not apply. You prove to the market how you will conduct business, and that prompts shoppers and prospects to give you an opportunity to serve them. Everybody wants to deal with a company they can trust. You build what I've come to learn is really the number one asset of that any company can have, and that is a rock-solid, loyal customer base. You have customers who tell everybody they know how terrific you are. Yeah, your growth may be slower, but it will likely be steadier and more sustainable, because working daily to perform great work is a reward that you can't measure in dollars. Devotion to the daily processes of building a great company is the path toward growing great in every way. Now, not to mention the fact that you end up with a culture that is terrific, because you're building character all along the way. In yourself, in your company, pride. There's pride. Pride in accomplishing something valuable, something worthwhile to yourself, to your employees, to your customers, to the community. Sure, right is right. But there are compelling reasons why doing the right thing makes perfect business sense. Let me leave you with just a few suggestions that may help you in the quest to grow great by doing the right things. Number one, don't have any moral flexibility at all. None. Zero. Never give an inch. Never entertain it. Just go in assuming that you will always refrain from compromising. That'll make it easier because you have determined ahead of time. You do know, don't you, that this very hour, this very moment that you're listening to me in this podcast, that there's some young man or group of young men or women who are deciding to go rob a store because they need money and they're desperate, and it's what crosses their mind. Does that cross your mind? Well, I would hope not. I would hope that you have already predetermined that your need for money is never going to reach a point where your first thought is, I'm going to go rob a store. No, because you've already made up your mind ahead of time. Do that with your moral flexibility when it comes to business. Number two, coach for performance, fire for poor behavior. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't fire for poor performance, but you should be more tolerant as you try to coach or help a person elevate their performance. An employee who knowingly lies to a customer, though, or commits some other wrong, should be fired. If you tolerate it, you send a signal to your entire employee base that you're going to allow it. And that's also their signal that indeed you are morally flexible. It's a bad signal to send. Well, unless, of course, you are morally flexible. Number three, walk the talk. Training people how to cheat customers while you extol how you would never cheat employees is foolish. It's even more foolish, the belief that they'll never steal from you. You will wind up running a den of thieves. Instead, be honest all the time. Expect honesty from others all the time, through thick and thin. It is the best option. Number four, your biggest wins may come from losses. You know, I think back over the years of the times when I have walked away from something because it was unethical or immoral or illegal, and yet there were some big dollars on the line. And the company found out what the dollars were that was at stake. And it made an enormous impact on the culture for good, because it shows people that you're not just preaching a sermon, you're living it. You believe it. You're devoted to it. And when people see how much you mean it, they see how much it matters to you, guess what they do? Yeah, they join the revolution with you. They come right along. That's called leadership. If you've been willing to do wrong in the past for the sake of profits or anything else, then I'm asking you today, draw the line in the sand. Well, better yet, etch it in stone. Stop. Make up your mind. Enough. No more. Don't con yourself into thinking, well, everybody does it. No, they don't. And don't keep telling yourself that it's no big deal. Don't keep telling yourself that everybody does it. Those are lies. It is a big deal. I don't care how much money is on the line. I don't care how little money is on the line. You are eroding your character every time you flex. You are diminishing your value as a human being. Stop doing that so you can begin to build yourself up. Life is about fortifying yourself so that you can grow and become a better version of you, the very best version of you. Be well, do good, grow great. The website is growgreat.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. Have a great week.